So if it meets the buy box, which basically is just a simple set of metrics that we have when we're looking to acquire a property, if it meets our buy box, then we're going to hold that property. If it doesn't meet our buy box, then we typically have two options. We can fix and flip that property for a larger profit.
If you have over $200,000 sitting stagnant in your bank, retirement account, or home equity, then you're literally losing money. On this show, you learn how to get that money working for you consistently and conservatively. Learn to grow your nest egg with your host, Sean Winslow. Let's dive in.
What's going on, everyone? I'm Sean Winslow, and this is the Multifamily Money Podcast. Welcome back to another Multifamily Monday episode. This is when we dive deep into all things multifamily investing. In my opinion, one of the best ways to grow generational wealth and true passive income. When I say passive, I don't mean that you don't have to do anything if you're going to be an active investor. But if you're a passive investor, it's one of the best ways to get cash flow. And we all know cash flow is king, especially when it's not traded for time. And that's why I love this business. That's why I think multifamily is one of the best places to be. And that's why we're seeing a crap ton of money flock into this industry, not only from other investors that maybe traditionally invested in traditional markets, but also other real estate investors that may have invested in other asset classes. And we've seen a lot of money move from office, retail into multifamily because it's just a great place to be, especially when we have a 4 million unit housing deficit. The demand is there. But today's episode, we're talking about different aspect of real estate investing. We do talk multifamily a little bit, but this guest is primarily more single family, but we talk about a strategy that can be used in multifamily. So I feel it'll be very valuable. And I'm not sure if I mentioned it before, but I don't think I've ever brought it up in depth, and that's the BRRRR method. It's an acronym, B with four R's. He'll jump more into detail what it stands for, but I'll just give you a quick overview. It's so you buy the property, you then rehab the property, you then rent it, which will now rent for a higher rate than before. Then after you rent it, you refinance it. And then what happens when you refinance, if you've done it correctly, the goal is to pull all your money that you had into it, so all the equity you had into it out, and the final R is repeat. So then you just do the process over again. So we dive deep into like how he's been able to scale his business using the BRRRR method. He started off more wholesaling and flipping. And then he quoted this cool term. He said the transaction treadmill, and that's what wholesaling and flipping is. And he wanted to get off of that for many reasons. Just the grind that it is, and also that doing that is not a tax efficient way to grow wealth because you're taxed on it. It's active income. It's considered like a short-term gain, right? Which is taxed higher than a long-term gain. So he then decided to get, I need to start buying stuff and holding on to it. So, and he's utilized the BRRRR method to get up to over 90 units. So he's been able to scale quite a bit and he's got a lot of great energy and a lot of great information. So I know you guys will get a lot out of this, but before we jump into it, housekeeping as always, if you guys get any value out of this, please, please, please share with someone else you feel that could get value as well. That's how I grow this show. That's how we can get, provide more value to more listeners. And then as always, if you haven't left the rating or review, I would appreciate it if you do. All right, guys, let's get into it. Hey, David, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. I'm so excited to be here, Sean.
All right. Well, I'm excited to have you. Appreciate you taking time out of your busy day. We've talked a little bit before, so I know you're a busy guy. So if you don't mind, everyone loves a good origin story. If you don't mind, just jumping right into it.
Yeah, man, let's do it, man. So I'll try to keep it short because I am a talker. I will warn you in advance.
Hey, that's what podcasts are for, right?
That's right. So yeah, man, I mean, I'm 37 years old. I live in St. Louis, Missouri, and I was born and raised here, left St. Louis to go to college at the University of Missouri in Columbia, which is just about 100 miles just west of here. So spent the majority of my life in the state of Missouri, and I started investing in real estate at the age of 20, man. So almost 18 years ago, and I was house hacking, right? So I was buying a house, renting out the other rooms and providing myself with a little investment along with reducing the cost of living, you know, while I was in college. So I did that three times while I was in school, Sean. But here's the thing, man, the first 10 years of my investing career, I wasn't a full-time investor. I was very passive. I was buying one house a year on average. I think at the end of 10 years, I maybe had 12 rentals. So I had a couple years in there where I maybe had bought in two. But for the most part, very, very passively, the first 10 years. I say this often, I did it wrong the first 10 years. And the reason is because each of those 12 properties that I had acquired over those first 10 years were full retail deals. They were off the MLS. They were with an agent. I wasn't capturing any equity. I wasn't really finding motivated sellers. I mean, these were listed properties that we found on the market, you know, via an agent. But I did acquire 12 properties over that first 10-year period. So not bad, obviously. But the thing, the reason I say I did it wrong, Sean, is because I was leaving $20,000, $30,000 in these, or I essentially having bring that amount of money to the table to acquire these properties as I would acquire them. So I look back and just say, I kind of did it wrong because I know now that we can directly market sellers and find motivated sellers that are have a distressed property, or maybe they're having a distressed situation in their life, and we're able to get properties at deep discounts. Well, I didn't know that for the first 10 years. And during that first 10 years, Sean, I was either working for different sales and marketing companies and had role in different sales and marketing, or I would have small businesses that I would start with my friends building websites or selling products online. And real estate wasn't really my core focus. Well, the tables turned about seven, almost 8 years ago at this point. And I decided, you know what? I'm tired of working for other people. I'm tired of doing this passively and part-time. I'm going to just jump in full-time. And basically, I started reading books and podcasts, listening to podcasts and hiring coaches and taking courses, and basically learned that there's a better way to invest in real estate. But it all comes down to finding deals. Without being able to find deals, we're going to be back at square one, where we're going to have to bring a lot of money to the table to acquire the real estate. And over the last, let's call it 8 years at this point, because it's approaching 8 years, my partner and I, we have wholesaled about 700 properties, and we have done the Burr method about 200 times.
Wow.
At this point, my passion is buying rental properties. It's being a landlord. It's creating cash flow, which in my eyes leads to financial freedom, which then leads to time freedom. I mean, that's really the goal that we all have. At least the way I see it is when we get into real estate, we want to achieve both financial and time freedom. But the problem is that most people, when they get into real estate, they go from working 40 hours at a job they hate to 60 or 70 hours in their real estate business. So they get the exact opposite of what they are looking to achieve. And I'll be honest, man, I was that guy. I left a 40-hour a week job and jumped in and started working 60, 70 hours a week. Now I was working for myself, so there's obviously some pros there, but I didn't achieve what I had set out to achieve by creating financial freedom. And I was on what I like to refer to as a transaction treadmill, doing a lot of wholesale deals, but you market, you run an appointment, you make an offer, you find a buyer, you get paid, you start all over again, right? And over the last, let's say 4 to maybe 5 years, we've really dug in and decided, you know what? Let's really try to achieve this financial freedom. Let's really try to achieve time freedom. And the best way to do that is buy and hold. And we love using the Burr method because it allows us to acquire assets with very little money and oftentimes none of our own money in the end. So without boring you too much here, Sean, that's kind of my story, how I got in the game and what we've been up to. But yeah, man, again, I really appreciate you having me on the show today.
Yeah, of course. Well, thanks for breaking that down for us. And I just want to highlight specifically one thing you said about the time freedom. To me, that's the most important part of financial freedom, because what's the point of having financial freedom if you don't have any time to utilize that, right? So I think that's everyone should focus on that, because that's a huge aspect. Like, it allows you to do what you want, when you want, with who you want. And, you know, it can help us give back to the world and make the world a better place and spend time with the people we like. So I appreciate you bringing that up. If you don't mind breaking down the Burr method, I've only brought it up like a couple of times, so there might be some listeners that aren't familiar with it. So if you don't mind breaking that down, what it looks like and how you execute it.
Yeah, man. So here's the thing. Burr method is my passion. It's my favorite real estate strategy, and it's really what I love to do the most. So what is the Burr method? Let's start simple and from the top, guys. Burr is an acronym, and it's B with four R's. And you might even hear people refer to it as the BRRRS method. And they're basically just swapping out one of the R's for an S. And we'll get to that in a minute, right? But it's the same thing. It's a simple method or strategy that allows you to acquire assets with little to none of your own money while simultaneously scaling. That's really what it is before we break down what the acronym stands for. It's just a strategy that allows us to acquire assets with little to none of our own money in the end. So without further ado, the BRRRR method, again, an acronym, it's B with four R's. And the acronym stands for, the B stands for buy, but really you got to buy at a discount. We talked a little bit about that already. Like, it's very difficult to make money in real estate if you're paying full retail, Sean. So you got to buy at a discount, right? So the first letter is B, and that stands for buy at a discount. And then there's four R's that follow the B, and those R's stand for rehab. That's the first R. The second R is rent. The third R is refinance. And then the fourth R is to repeat. And I mentioned some people refer to it as BRRRRs, and they're really just swapping out that last repeat or that last R for an S, and they replace it with scale. So regardless if you are repeating the process over and over or you are scaling the process, it's the same thing at the end of the day, right? So how does the process work? Well, we go out and we buy a property, the B, at a discount, and we capture equity. Next, we rehab that property. And we're typically capturing a little more equity when we're rehabbing the property. But a couple other things are happening simultaneously. When we rehab a property, we are able to get a higher appraisal. We're able to get higher rent. We're reducing a lot of the capital expenditures or CapEx that may be needed in that property because we're doing those right out the gate. Mm-hmm. And we are also reducing the risk that the lender is going to have if the event that we don't make our payments and they have to foreclose, they are much more likely to lend to us if we have a rehabbed property than if we have a property that has not been recently rehabbed. So B stands for buy. The first R stands for rehab. The next R is rent. You rent that property out. And then the third R is the refinance. And this is really where the magic happens, Sean, because we're going to buy a property at a discount, capture equity. We're going to rehab that property and we're going to capture a little bit more equity. But again, simultaneously, we're going to increase the value of that property for the appraisal and be able to charge more in rent for that property. But the cool thing is once we go through this process and we get to the refinance stage, the banks are typically going to be lending to us based upon what the property appraises for. Remember in the beginning when I said I was buying properties for the first 10 years and I was paying full retail? Well, what I was buying these properties for was basically what they were appraising for. Well, now by using the BRRRR method, our goal is to be all in. And when I say all in, I mean purchase, I mean rehab, I mean holding cost, I mean interest to our private or hard money lenders, utilities, closing costs, whatever, you name it. If we can be all into a property at, let's say, 80% or less of what it appraises for, and a bank is going to lend us 80% of what a property appraises for, what that allows us to do is to be all into that property for $0 out of pocket. So how do we do it? Well, we borrow money from private or hard money lenders to buy the property. And then we also borrow more money than we need to buy it to rehab it. So I'm typically going to a private lender and I'm asking for the purchase and the rehab from that same investor, that same private lender, or in some cases, hard money lender.
They'll give you 100% loan to cost?
Yeah, most of my lenders will. I mean, I have built up a really, really good relationship with a lot of my lenders. I have been in the game, like I said earlier, for about 8 years full time. I've got hundreds of deals under my belt. So my lenders know that when they lend me money that I'm buying deals at a discount, which protects them because that loan that they're giving me is backed by the deal, right? They're going to have a note and a deed of trust that's going to guarantee that they're going to get paid back or they're going to get the property. And then from there, yeah, we're going to rehab that property. We're going to go rent that property out and then we're going to take it to a bank. And if we can be all in at 80% of what it appraises for and the bank lends to us on the appraisal, typically an 80% loan, that allows us to acquire an asset with none of our own money in the end. And then again, that asset has a lot of the capital expenditures taken care of. It's going to rent for market rate or above. And it's going to easily appraise for much more than we're all into it for because we've done renovations and updated that property. So many advantages of using this method. But I think the main thing that I love about it is it's very scalable. So that last R here stands for repeat, or again, some people may may refer to it as BRRRS, which is scale. But right now, my business has anywhere from 10 to 12 properties somewhere in the BRRRR method at any given time. We may have two or three that we're trying, that we're acquiring. We're getting ready to close on those. Might have three or four or five in some cases that we're in the middle of rehabbing. And then once we're done with the rehab, we send it over to our property management team and they will then go about the leasing. And then once we get these properties leased, we then take them to our refinance partners. Now, the refinance partners can be the local lenders. Ideally, it's a local bank or credit union, not too big of a bank. But there's also some national lenders that we have started working with recently as well, which pros and cons to the national lenders, of course. But a lot of these national lenders nowadays will let you do 30-year fixed rate loans, which has kind of been unheard of until recently, because we're buying all these properties in an LLC. We're buying them in our company, which means that when we go to get the loan, we're not getting primary loans. We're getting commercial loans. Yep. So a lot of the local banks and credit unions that we work with will give us 20 to 25 year amortizations with typically 3 to 5 year fixed rates. So they don't balloon, they renew, but that rate's going to change every 3 to 5 years. Well, if you go with some of these national lenders, they will do a 30-year fixed rate and term, right? Which is great because it's fixed. It doesn't change. And you're also getting to take advantage of that longer term, both rate and term, which is amazing. So love the BRRRR method. Such an amazing strategy. Again, my partner and I have done probably close to 200 BRRRRs over the last 4 to 5 years. Now, we don't own 200 properties today. We have about 90 units. 60 of those are single family homes. And then we have a scattered twos and fours, and we have a 20 unit as well. So we have about 90 units and our portfolio spits off about 20 grand a month in passive income. So it's a great place to be. We love being landlords. You know, not only do you get the cash flow from these properties, but you get appreciation. If you hold them for a long enough period of time, everything's typically going to appreciate over a long enough period of time. We also get what we like to refer to as depreciation, which is the government's way of incentivizing us for providing housing. So we get some tax depreciation there. And then my favorite approach to this, or thing that we get from being landlords, is that we're capturing wealth. We're acquiring and capturing wealth. But here's the thing about when you capture wealth or acquire wealth is that you don't have to pay taxes on it. You only have to pay taxes whenever you create income. So of course, we're creating income from the cash flow, but it's passive income, which means it's taxed a lot lower than your earned income. Earned income is when you trade your time for money. And one of the best things about being a landlord is that we are creating wealth without having to pay taxes on that wealth, right? If we can capture $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 worth of equity in a property, once we get through this entire BRRRR method, that is wealth that we created, but we're not taxed on it. We're not taxed on it till we sell that property down the road. So many advantages, Sean, so many advantages of the BRRRR method and being a landlord. And I think the main thing that I love about it is I can do this with very, very, very little, and in often cases, none of my own money.
It's transformative in building wealth for sure. And another point I'd like to add too, that you mentioned depreciation, and that can defer. Not only are you not paying taxes on that wealth that's growing, that equity that's growing, but also the depreciation can defer your taxes on that passive income, which is very powerful.
I'm not limited to just offsetting the income from my real estate, but any income that I create, right? Love it, man.
That's why flippers and wholesalers really need to start buying stuff long-term like you are, because they are in a transactional business. They don't get any depreciation. So all the money they're making from those type of deals, they're getting taxed on, right? So, but you're a real estate professional, meaning you work at least 750 hours and at least 50% of your time is spent in real estate. You get to take the depreciation from the buy and holds and then offset any other income you make from, like, maybe flipping or wholesaling.
Yeah, which is great. You know, and that helps a ton. I mean, I obviously pay taxes, but the rate at which I pay taxes is way less than most people, right? I mean, effective tax rate's probably somewhere around 12 or 15%, whereas most people's 30%+.
Well, David, you need to get in some big deals with me and you won't be paying any. But one thing I do like to bring up on that, because then everyone's always like, well, you don't pay any taxes, blah, blah, blah. Well, our properties pay taxes. And to me, that's better because it's going to a local government actually make a bigger difference than, you know, federal government, where that's going to pat other people's pockets that shouldn't. So, but I digress. But a big part of your strategy, which I want to dive into, is buying at a discount. And then no matter what you do, that's whatever type of investment you're in, that's what you should be doing. So to me, the next natural question is, well, how do you find these discounted properties, especially in a crazy market like we have today?
Man, what a great question. So we do a lot of things. You know, we have some cold callers on the payroll that cold call for us. We do some cold texting. We do some driving for dollars to try to find, you know, properties that are distressed. We cycle on and off with AdWords. I've been on and off the radio over the years. A lot of our leads are coming from referrals, just because we've been in the business for about 8 years at this point. So a lot of people around town, they know who we are and they know that we're looking for deals, and they'll tee us up.
The wholesalers are the referral generators.
I would say maybe 20 to 30% of the deals that we're buying are from other wholesalers. Maybe another 10 or 15% just comes from our network. They're not necessarily wholesalers, but they're just people that say, hey, I got my great aunt Sue that's got this property. Okay. She needs to sell it and it needs a lot of work. So a lot of it comes down to marketing. And whenever I bring a new student in, I love the Burr method. And in fact, I coach on it. But whenever I bring a new student in, I want to make it very clear to them that, hey, this is a marketing business before it's a real estate investing business. Mm-hmm. Without deals or the ability to buy properties at discounts, it's very difficult to make money in real estate, at least quickly, right? Anybody can make money in real estate if they hold it for long enough, right?
Right.
But if you're able to buy properties at discounts, here's the thing. I love to wholesale. I love to do some fix and flips, and we usually just have a couple going at a time. And my passion, my most favorite, is to buy and hold and be a landlord. But if you're not getting deals, all three of those strategies are going to be difficult to make a profit in. But if you're able to find a motivated seller that's either distressed in their own livelihood, or they own a property that is distressed, or in oftentimes both the seller and the property that they have are distressed, they are going to be willing to sell that property to you at a discount because it is often in need of a lot of work. And all that we really do, in my opinion, and I say we as all of the real estate investors out there, I'm speaking for everybody here, is we don't do a whole lot more than just trade convenience for a discount. That's typically how we're able to get good deals. We find people that are in need of our help. They need to sell a property and they're not interested in listing on the MLS. They're not interested in fixing that property up. They're not interested in decluttering it or cleaning it or painting it. They just want this problem to go away. And they're okay leaving some money on the table or selling it at a discount to us because we come in and we offer convenience. So Sean, what does that convenience look like? It's so simple. There's really three things that we do that make up, in my opinion, about 80% of the convenience. Number one is we offer to pay them cash, right? We're not going to come in with a bunch of different contingencies on financing or whatnot. It's a cash deal, all right? Number two is we're going to buy the property as is. So again, we're not going to require them to fix the roof or to paint it or to clean it. Oftentimes, we'll buy properties where people just pack a bag and they leave, and they leave everything behind, and most of it's trash anyway. But as is comes in very, very handy. It's a convenience thing, right? And then number three is that we will move fast. Now, fast is a relative term, Sean. So when I say, hey, I'm going to be able to move fast, what I mean by that is that I'm going to typically be able to close on this property in 3 to 4 weeks, not 3 to 4 months, which is typically what it's going to take with an on-market transaction, right? Mm-hmm. So cash, as is, and fast are the three things that make up about 80% of the convenience that we're typically offering to a seller. And if they're willing to give us a discount, then we will open up the gates basically and offer them as much convenience as we possibly can. But if they're not willing to give us a discount, then we're going to pull back on that level of convenience.
That's huge. I think in any business you're in, it's about diagnosing that pain spot, finding it, and then providing a solution and having that solution be easy, right? On the commercial side, it's dealing with a lot of brokers because that's they bring 80 to 90% of the deals to the market. And one, yeah, it's getting them to accept you, accept your LOI, and so you can acquire the property. But even bigger part of it is once you have a signed PSA, you're under contract, it's to make that time from when that PSA was signed to when you close as easy and convenient for them as possible. Because then next time they're gonna be like, these guys are super easy to work with. They don't have the highest and best offer, but they're pretty close. Let's go with them because they're easy to work with. And
ease of work is the same exact thing as making their life convenient.
Right. Exactly. And yeah, sometimes that's worth more than money to people, right? Is just making their life easy. So I love that, man. You mentioned this before, which I think is a great strategy. What happens if, when I say you mentioned it before, is this when we were talking before we hit record? But so you're out here bird-dogging different strategies to find deals, get one, right? You hook one. Maybe you don't like it for a bird. Do you just let it go and on to the next, or what do you do?
Great question, man. So here's the thing. We're only buying discounted properties. We do not pay retail. In fact, I've done about 700 wholesale deals in the last 8 years. I've done almost 200 burrs, call it 200, in the last, let's say, 4 or 5 years. Every single one of those properties has been discounted. So 98, 99% of the time, they're going to be properties that are off market when it comes to, at least when it comes to the single family homes. On market is typically going to be retail, right? So what we're doing is we're marketing directly to sellers in various ways to find properties that are off market that typically need work. So we can, again, offer convenience in exchange for that discount. What was the question? I think I got sidetracked there.
Yeah. So you hook a deal and maybe it's not the deal you want, but you can get it under contract. What do you do? Just let it go.
So if it meets the buy box, which basically is just a simple set of metrics that we have when we're looking to acquire a property, right? If it meets our buy box, then we're going to hold that property. If it doesn't meet our buy box, then we typically have two options. We can fix and flip that property for a larger profit, or we can turn around and we can just wholesale that property and make it really, really simple for an end buyer to come in and buy that property from us. So we kind of have a little saying around our office, keep the best and wholesale the rest. So no matter what, if somebody comes to us and they're willing to sell us a property at a discount, we're going to put that property under contract. And then from there, we're going to decide, hey, should we go borrow some money from a private or hard money lender to acquire it? And then either fix and flip it or keep it as a rental burr, or is it not really one that we want to own or fix up or hold as long-term? And then what we're going to do is we're going to start marketing that property to our list of investors here locally, and sometimes even outside of the market, but we're going to then turn around and we're going to wholesale it. So great question. Keep the best, wholesale the rest. That's the motto, my friend.
Awesome. And I don't think I've ever actually talked about wholesaling on this podcast. So if you don't mind just giving a quick definition for maybe those that aren't familiar with it.
Oh man, I really appreciate you having me, man. That's great. So wholesaling, for those that aren't aware, is really just flipping paperwork. So what we do is we go out and we find a seller that's motivated. And I think it might help to just use some simple numbers, some simple math here, right? So let's say that we have a property that has an ARV of $200,000. That's the after repair value, right? But that property needs about $40,000 worth of work. So what we're going to do is we're going to take that $200,000 and we're going to times that by, let's say, 70%, which takes us down to $140,000. And then we're going to subtract out the $40,000 that we would need to repair that property. So that basically gives me a max allowable offer of about $100,000. Well, if I offer a seller, hey, I can pay you $85,000 for this property and they accept, well, then what I can do is I can get that property under contract and then I can shop that contract to purchase it to all of my investor friends, anybody that's on my buyer's list. And let's say that I do get it under contract for $85,000 and I market it out at $100,000 and somebody says, hey, I like the deal. I'll pay you $95,000 for it. I then just sell them my contract to purchase for $10,000 in this example, and then they show up at the closing table and purchase that property. So basically, it's flipping a property without fixing it, and oftentimes without even buying it first. We're flipping our agreement to purchase it. Now, there's a couple ways that you can do this. One would be to double close, where you actually buy it and then you turn around and sell it, often in the same day or even in the same hour. The other way of going about doing this is assigning your contract to your end buyer or your investor partner, right? And there's really no right or wrong way to do it. There's definitely pros and cons for each of these approaches. But to keep it super, super simple for your audience, Sean, wholesaling is nothing more than flipping properties without having to either buy them or fix them. And another way to word it would be to just get a property under contract and then to sell that purchase contract.
Yeah. What I see a lot of people do, which I think is smart, is maybe your end goal is not to be a wholesaler, but you want to be maybe a BRRRR investor, a long-term investor, but you don't have any cash. It's a great way to start generating some revenue so then you can further the business model you really want to go after. Or as you're doing it, it's to also supplement, well, this deal I can wholesale, but it's not great for BRRRR, so let's still make some money, which is very smart. And yeah, let's continue to talk about BRRRR. So we talked about how you find these discounted deals, but how are we closing them? And you mentioned you have private lenders, but for someone new, how do you develop those relationships? How do you find these private lenders? What does it look like?
Yeah. So, you know, we have several private lenders that we work with, and we don't discount the hard money lenders either. We prefer using private lenders because that's essentially another person, another investor. It's not necessarily a company, that oftentimes they're also real estate investors. And we have, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 different private investors locally that we love working with. And we will find a discounted deal and we'll go to them and we'll say, hey, we want to buy this property, but we don't want to use our own money. Will you lend us the money to both buy it and fix it up? And they often will say, yes, no problem. And then we'll pay them either a 10 or a 12% annualized interest rate. But the beautiful thing is we're not typically borrowing the money from a private lender or even a hard money lender for an entire year. We're often borrowing the money for 3 or 4 or maybe 6 months on the long side of things. So the amount of interest that we end up paying is pretty minimal in the big scheme of things here. How to find these lenders? So almost every single one of my lenders I met at a local real estate investment club. So I cannot emphasize enough, Sean, to your audience that if you are looking for a private lender, go join all of your local real estate investment clubs. They're called RIAs. And the best place to find these clubs is either go to your local Facebook groups. And I want to highlight local. Don't go join a Facebook group that's got 800,000 people in it. You want to find the hyper local. So I'm in St. Louis. So I would go into Facebook and find St. Louis real estate investors, St. Louis landlords, St. Louis wholesalers. And I would join those groups and I would try to see if any of those people in those groups host meetings or meetups. And then another great place to find these local private money lenders or hard money lenders is on meetup.com. Meetup.com is a great resource to find the groups, figure out when they meet. Oftentimes the groups will be free to attend. And if they're not, you're talking $15, $20, $25 to attend a meeting. Oftentimes you can buy a whole year access for $100. Very, very inexpensive. But these private investors and private lenders are typically going to be other real estate investors that are local in the market. Now, I mentioned hard money, and I want to just touch on that just briefly, Sean. Hard money, it's very, very similar, but hard money is typically somebody that runs a business that lends, right? Yep. So a private investor could be my Aunt Sue. It could be a friend that has a 401k or an IRA that they can borrow against. Maybe they have a life insurance policy they can borrow against. But it's essentially just peer-to-peer. And I'm calling or texting or emailing them and saying, hey, I got this deal and I need 80 grand next week to close on it and fix it. Want to make 10% on your money? And ideally they say yes. But if I don't have any private investors, then I can go find somebody that's actually in the business of lending short-term to fulfill that exact same need. And you'll notice that when you go to these RIA clubs, these real estate investment associations, there will be people walking around handing out business cards saying, hey, I'm a hard money lender. Let me know if you need a loan. I mean, there are everywhere. There's tons of them in my market. And I'd imagine that there's tons of them in all markets.
Yeah, I agree.
No right or wrong way to approach it. Typically, what I've seen, though, is that private lenders, they have a certain finite amount of money that they're willing to lend. Whereas hard money lenders, they still have a finite amount of money, but it's often much, much more. And they're often lending to multiple people at the same time. They've built a business around lending. Whereas a lot of our private lenders, they just kind of do it on the side to keep some of their money working for them, as well as to keep them in the game. I mean, you'd be surprised. A lot of our private lenders are older gentlemen and sometimes females too, of course, but they're older investors that maybe don't have the energy and the resources to get out and find the deals like we do, but they still want to be actively involved or investing in real estate. And they often own a bunch of rental properties or are doing fix and flips. And when we come to them and we say, hey, we got this really great deal, you know, we're looking to get a short-term loan, they're like, hey, no problem, because they know that if we screw up, that they're going to be able to take that property from us, but we just bought that at a discount. So they're going to be able to get it at a discount as well. Now, the goal is to never screw up and never have a property taken from you and have to be foreclosed on. But that is the advantage to the lender, is that it is backed by the real estate. It's not just a loan where I say, hey, I need some money to go do this. No, it is backed by a mortgage, a note, and a deed.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. That's solid advice. And yeah, meetups are the best, right? Meetups, real estate investment associations are the best place, because those are people that are actually doing deals and they want to be there, right?
They want to be there. They want to lend.
Yeah.
So private lenders, hard money lenders. So typically our private lenders are going to be sometimes 8%, but most of the time 10 or 12%. Whenever you start to go with a hard money lender that actually has made a business out of this, they're going to be a little bit more expensive. They're going to typically be 12, maybe 14. It could even be as high as 16% interest. But again, don't let that freak you out, because you're not borrowing this money at 16% interest for 20 years. You're borrowing it for 4 or 5 or 6 months.
Right.
End of the day, if you can use somebody else's money to acquire a piece of real estate and to fix that real estate up, and you can build yourself in a decent amount of equity, when you go and you use the BRRRR method, next you're going to get it rented out and then you're going to refinance, the bank is going to lend you on the appraised amount. That is really key when it comes to the BRRRR method, because look at what I did in the beginning, right? The first 10 years, I say I did it the wrong way, Sean. And the reason I say that is because there wasn't any value that was created. The property was, I'd buy it for 165, it would appraise at 165. So no matter which way you look at it, the bank's going to lend you 80% of what it is going to appraise for or what you're going to buy it for. Well, in the BRRRR method, they don't necessarily care what you bought it for or what your all-in number is. What they care is that they're going to lend you 80%, not always, but just for simple math, roughly, of what it appraises for. So if we can be all into a property at 80% of or less of what it appraises for, and the bank's going to lend 80% of that appraised number, that allows us to get into properties with very, very little money and oftentimes zero money out of pocket. It's amazing.
That's powerful. It's how you really generate wealth, right? Other people's money, and you can just keep putting yours to work and then pull it all out.
Yeah. And that's another thing too. If that equity increases over time, you know, over 3, 4, 5, maybe even 10 years, your equity goes from 30 grand to 150,000. Well, then you can refinance that
tax-free
new 80% loan. You can pull some of that equity out, and check this out. You know this, I'm sure, but that isn't income. That's debt. So you don't have to pay any taxes on that money that you pulled out. So I love leverage. And that's a beautiful thing about the BRRRR method is that we can use leverage in every piece of this. So let me explain. When we're buying properties at discounts, right? We can leverage virtual assistants. We can leverage other wholesalers to help us find these deals, right? When it comes to the rehab, we can leverage contractors and general contractors and subcontractors to go in and fix these properties up for us. I don't like swinging a hammer. And I don't suggest that you guys do either. Find people that like to do those type of things. Leverage their time and their efforts to help you rehab or renovate these properties. The next R, or the next step in the BRRRR method, would be to rent. Well, we love property managers. So we leverage property managers to help us lease these properties and keep them rented and collect our rent. And then we go and we leverage the banks when we refinance, right? And that's where the magic happens, because we're getting to pay back our private lender for the purchase, pay them back for the rehab, pay them back for the holding costs, the closing costs, and often all of the interest that we would have to pay them for that short-term loan. And then the last step is to repeat. And that is leverage right there, right? You're just getting to repeat this process over and over. And you're not limited to just doing one at a time. Like I said earlier, you know, my business partner and I, we typically have 10, 12, sometimes as many as 15 properties that are somewhere in the process, either the acquisition, the buy, the rehab or the renovation, the rental, the leasing process, or oftentimes we may have to have a property be rented for 2 or 3 months, which is called seasoning, before the bank will allow us to refinance that loan. So leverage plays an amazing role, not only in real estate investing, but specifically the Burr method. And that's why I love it so much.
Oh, that's awesome. And yeah, me too. Leverage is king. Okay, before I let you go, before I ask you our final two questions that I always ask. First, where can people find you?
Yeah, man. So again, I do coach. I love helping people learn the Burr method, learn how to acquire assets. That's really what rentals are at the end of the day, right? They're assets. Yep. They're things that put money in your pocket each and every month. So if you want to learn more about the Burr method or even just working with me, head on over to wholesalinginc.com/rentals. I'm a new host on the Wholesaling Inc. podcast, and I have a program that can help individuals learn how to get involved in the Burr method. So again, that's wholesalinginc.com/rentals.
Awesome. All right. Last two questions. First one, why real estate? Why do you want to invest in real estate to grow wealth? Why is that your investment strategy? And most importantly, how has it changed your life?
Love it, man. So number one, I want to be my own boss. And I also don't want to have to pay a bunch of money in taxes. And as you know, of course, Sean, maybe not all the listeners do, but the highest taxes that you can pay is when you trade time for money. It's your earned income. And real estate allows me to earn money passively, but it also allows me to use leverage, allows me to be my own boss, and it allows me to create wealth without having to pay a bunch of taxes on that. So multiple reasons right there on that one.
Awesome. All right. Last question. If think back to the future, if you had a DeLorean and you could go back in time and you could tell your younger self one piece of financial advice, what would that be?
Don't wait to buy real estate. Buy real estate and wait.
There you go.
That's it.
I love it. All right, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on. This has been an awesome show. I've gotten value out of it. I know my listeners will. So I just want to thank you for coming on.
Hey, Sean, thank you so much for having me, man. It's been an absolute pleasure. And yeah, hopefully some of this conversation will provide a ton of value to your listeners. So again, thank you so much for having me, Sean.
Awesome. Well, listeners, as always, thanks for tuning in. And I know you got a lot of value out of this one, but we'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, this is Sean Winslow. After being in the financial service industry for years and having candid conversations with good people just like you, I realized that so many of us are wanting an investment strategy that provides solid returns and consistent income without the bumps in the road. There's little known secret that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. There is investment out there that is less volatile and the returns are stronger. Get more details by going to greenbriercg.com and clicking on the free e-report. And by the way, if this show has provided you any value, then feel free to leave an honest written review and of course, share it with a friend who needs it. See you next week for another great show.